Eat, Drink, Indie Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat, drink, indie. Welcome to Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. We have got a great show for you today. One that takes a look back at 20 years ago and looks ahead to what's coming. We're starting out today talking with restaurateur Lyle Feigenbaum of Scholars Inn in Bloomington. A lot has changed in the 20 years since Scholars Inn opened on College Avenue in Bloomington. And not all of it was good, as we'll find out when we talk with Lyle about getting into the restaurant business, getting out, and getting back in again. He tells us why and how it all happened. Plus, we'll hear about a TV series he's written about the restaurant business, and we'll get a few details on the pilot that he hopes will be produced later this year. Then we'll dip into the Eat, Drink, Indie archives and revisit an interview from earlier this year about a local company that's seeing significant success in the hard soda business. We'll talk with entrepreneur Erin Eds about Garden Party Botanical Hard Sodas and how she grew the idea from a farmer's market recipe to an award-winning product. So stay with us for more here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. We've talked lately here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio about the challenges of the local restaurant business, and there are certainly plenty. Today, we'll get a little perspective on some of those challenges when we talk with Lyle Feigenbaum, who with his wife, Carrie, opened Scholars Inn in Bloomington 20 years ago, nurtured it along, and later sold the business. But after things didn't work out with the new owners, the Feigenbaums are back and have lots of plans for the restaurant. Now, you may know Scholars Inn as Destination Dining in Bloomington, or even as the producers of that awesome granola. But the business started out as a dessert cafe and wine bar. As for what the building housed before that, well, if you're like me, it's pretty hard to believe that there was a brothel in the middle of Bloomington.
So Scholars Inn, 717 North College in Bloomington, my wife and I, we bought that building back in 1996.
Wow.
And we wanted to open back then. I had just moved back here from New York City where I was an actor, which meant that I waited tables at a lot of cool restaurants. We wanted to open a New York-style restaurant in Bloomington. And everyone said, "You're crazy. Don't do it.
Yeah, I was wondering what the response was.
Bloomington will never support an upscale restaurant, one that's specifically focused on dinner and a Sunday brunch. So you
opened it anyway?
We did. And thank God we did, because it was wonderful. I mean, it was, while the restaurant industry, as you know, is not an easy industry, we had a very successful run for many, many years. But my wife and I, we have a lot of other interests, of which you know now, because we can talk about that. We wanted to do some other things with our lives, and we had an opportunity to sell it.
And when was that?
That was in, we ended up selling it in November of 2015. Now, we always kept the property. So we still owned that beautiful old mansion, that house that sits right next to the Scholars Inn Bed and Breakfast, which is now student housing, which we still own, too. But so these guys, I don't know if they just didn't know the market. Who knows? I don't even want to speak for them. The bottom line is they virtually destroyed the restaurant.
So it really didn't work out.
No, it really didn't, and they did a lot of damage to that restaurant. So it became evident that they were going to go into default, and we had to figure out what we wanted to do. Now, it was not our intention to get back into the restaurant industry.
So you left, and you intended
to
stay.
In fact,
we
have teamed up with Orange Theory Fitness. We are very excited about that. We're opening in Bloomington in the new addition to the mall. I spend 50 hours a week telling people about Orange Theory and how it's the greatest workout in the world. It really is. It's fantastic.
So you weren't planning on getting back in the biz?
No, was not. But when it became available, the one good thing, or the two good things that this group did, was they hired a terrific chef and a great GM, and they happened to be married.
Very handy.
That's right. And they have a family. They're a younger version of Carrie and myself. And so we had to learn about them. We had to learn about his food, and it's terrific. And we felt like, you know what? If we're going to do it, let's do it right.
So let's go back 20 years and tell me what made you decide to open the fine dining type of restaurant in Bloomington and how that went.
My wife and I love to entertain to this day. I can't tell you how many times we had a crazy busy New Year's Eve at Scholars Inn to throw a party at our house right after. We love to see people happy. It's that simple. And so by creating a restaurant, we were able to fulfill that need.
So what was it like in 1996, 1997?
Well, we started off as the Scholars Inn Dessert Cafe and Wine Bar.
Okay, now I kind of remember that.
That's right.
Right?
So because the kitchen was small. The kitchen was, the listeners can't see this room, but this room is probably 15 by 15. That's the size of our kitchen. And so that's what we had to do. And we just pushed the envelope. And so six months later.
How was the reaction to that? The dessert cafe and wine bar specifically.
It went okay. I would not say. Did you ever see the movie with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan? I can't remember if it was the little shop around the corner. I can't remember the name. Oh, You've Got Mail?
You've Got Mail,
right.
Sure.
Well, they met. There was a place, Cafe Lalo, in New York City. It was a dessert cafe. And we're like, well, let's model it after that.
Oh, so it really was modeled after a real place.
Kind of, sort of.
Okay.
But through its success, which was moderate, but Carrie and I, we're dreamers. We wanted to do big things, so we expanded that. And we did. So we expanded the kitchen. And then ultimately the upstairs. By the way, the upstairs at Scholars Inn, do you know what it was before we bought it?
No, what?
It was a brothel.
Come on.
It was a Korean karaoke bar, and you couldn't get in. And the upstairs, it was the VIP room, was $50 to get in the upstairs. So what did we do, right? When they got evicted, we went right over. Finally, we were able to get upstairs. We went up. We couldn't believe it. There were beds all over. Pornographic materials.
My goodness.
I kid you,
you
not. It was a brothel in the center of Bloomington, Indiana.
So
what did we do? We turned that brothel into our bedroom and we put the restaurant downstairs. And then after a couple years of moderate success, we said, okay, let's blow out the upstairs. And that's when we became very successful. So it was a big deal. Some things that we would do differently because it was very expensive to do. But if you ever go there now, you can see we went to the peaks of the house. It's cool. We made this, I think it's the second oldest building in Bloomington, Indiana. We made it look very, very cool. And so that's when things really took off.
So this was in the 90s?
That was 2001 at this point. And with its success, being from Indianapolis, and we bought a bunch of property on Mass Ave. And we put a Scholars Inn on Mass Ave as well.
Now, talk a little bit about the expansion, because you did grow quite a bit at that time.
Yeah, and it was a big, big deal. Now, our whole thought was we like buying the property, because if something happens to the restaurant, we like having real estate.
Sure.
Okay, makes you very cash poor, by the way, okay, for a very long time.
Right.
All right, but we like that. But with Scholars Inn up here, it was unbelievably successful. Now, we backed away a little bit. We stayed in Bloomington, right or wrong, and ultimately we made some changes, and we ended up selling that restaurant. And we kept all the property, and it's highly successful now. Mesh restaurant is in there.
That's right. Now, you went through a time where you were rebranding. You know, we weren't calling it Scholars Inn anymore. We were calling it SI. For a while.
In Indianapolis,
yeah, in Indianapolis,
that was correct. That was the biggest mistake I've ever done in my life.
Really?
Yeah, because it wasn't needed.
We hear a lot about rebranding these days.
That was not needed.
That's interesting.
Scholars Inn had a great brand up here. What was needed was a change of management. That was the big thing.
So it needed a change, just not the one.
It did. And so we thought it was that we needed to dramatically make a change. You know, in New York City, every 5 years, it might be time. And so we did something that was, it just made it too intimate, and really not a reflection of who my wife and myself were. I'll be the first to admit it was a major mistake.
We've been talking with Lyle Feigenbaum of Scholars Inn in Bloomington. We'll be right back with more on what the future holds for the restaurant. So stay with us here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. I'm Jolene Ketzenberger, and we are back today talking with restaurateur Lyle Feigenbaum of Scholars Inn in Bloomington. Lyle and his wife Carrie founded Scholars Inn 20 years ago, then later sold the restaurant, but are now back as owners. Lyle tells us about the response he's gotten to news of their return, what we can expect from executive chef Matt Plaisir and general manager Molly Otto, and about the changes in store for Bloomington's iconic restaurant.
We want it fun. That's the key word. And with this remodel that we're doing down there, I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit. We hired, by the way, the designer, Fannerman Design, and Lori is terrific. She's worked with Cunningham Group, who is actually in Mesh, mm-hmm. But also Union 50 and the livery that just opened up. She just designed that. So she is going to work with us down in Bloomington to design this restaurant that is cool, hip, and very approachable. Not only approachable in design, but approachable in food and drink as well, because we want to make it so that it's affordable and that people just love to hang out there. So it will dramatically change.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you have a very well established name, and so you're kind of changing it up a little bit, right?
Yeah, it's necessary. It's absolutely necessary. Look, as we talked before we got on the air, the climate in Bloomington and the restaurant scene has definitely changed. And you have to be able to relate not only to people who want to come for special occasions, right, but more importantly, to the everyday crowd. And there's so much foot traffic around Scholars Inn now. If we're purely a destination, then we're missing the boat. That being said, the food will be better than ever, and the prices will be more affordable than ever.
Well, now that's very interesting. Why is that? Why a shift away from the sort of special occasion dining?
Because you can't survive.
That's what I.
There's just no way you can survive. So
that's the
we
thing,
want to,
right?
And you know, if it's a good restaurant, it can be good every day and good for a special occasion. And we'll also
good
have
point.
The private party space, particularly the upstairs, that keeps that separation. And I don't know what the full design is, but I know the parameters that we've laid out for the designer. And we want people to be able to come there 2-3 times a week if they want. Doesn't mean they have to eat a full dinner every time, but whether it's to have a cocktail at the bar, and I can assure you the bars will be changing and will be a focal point of the restaurant. Everything will be fresh from the cocktails to the food and very approachable and, like I said, affordable. I don't want to get into too much exactly because, again, I don't know specifically, but I do know small plates will certainly be on the menu.
Now, talk a little bit about your clientele and how people have reacted to this news, because there's been a response.
Yeah, it's been overwhelming. So we were there Saturday night. And again, we've had the restaurant back a little over a month now. And we were there Saturday night. And it was, let me tell you, it was we went to BJ's the night before. It opened up in Bloomington, packed. I mean, they must have put through 1,000 to 1,500 people there. And it was great. We had a good time. We went to Scholars Inn the next night, and it was the Taste of Bloomington, but it was sparse. And we had dinner upstairs. We were able to have a little private get-together with my cousin. It was his birthday. And the food was unbelievable. It was the best I've ever had at Scholars Inn. I was blown away. And it thrilled me. Now, I've had the food before, obviously, in the last month, but this made me feel like, and by the way, our chef was actually at a wedding, so it was his staff,
mm-hmm.
that did a great job. And it was that point I said, okay, I'm all in. We had already signed the designer, so I was all in. But I was all in enough to do my first serious post on Facebook and to let people know what is going on with Scholars Inn and that how proud we are of that restaurant, how proud we are to work with Matt and Chef Matt and Molly, and how proud we are of Bloomington. And the response has been unbelievable. We've had almost 1,400 likes of my post. I think the most I ever had before was like 50. We've had almost 800 shares of my post alone. And the overwhelming response has been positive. Welcome back. It's still overwhelming and incredibly appreciative. The restaurant industry is tough. And usually what you hear is negative. If it's great, they assume it's going to be that. But people like to, you know, tell you when there's problems, and they certainly do, by the way. And it was very, very nice to hear that, and I'm still overwhelmed, and I personally have responded to every single comment, because in the restaurant industry, we appreciate every single person who comes through that door.
Now, why do you think that is? Why do you think that there was such a response to that? Because it has been open all along, right?
A lot of people didn't know it was still open, by the way. I told you, they did a lot of damage. And so a lot of people stopped coming.
To the brand of Scholars Inn.
Yeah, and specifically to that restaurant. So I don't know that they knew it was still open, many of them. And the ones that did know it was still open didn't appreciate their experience with the new owners, before us, and so stopped coming back.
So how do you revitalize something like that? How do you make up for the time when you were away?
Brick by brick. Step one is Scholars Inn, we haven't changed anything other than the fact that the food now with the new chef,
right.
He needed a little guidance. And I'm not even talking about guidance with the food necessarily. He needed some support, whether he could order more expensive cuts of meat or the quality of the product. He needed a lot of things. Molly, too, in the front of the house, and he wasn't getting any of that. So that's where Carrie and I have been able to help. On top of that, they want to know what their future is. Now they see their future. Matt and Molly are effectively going to be owners. Carrie and I, while we'll be there on occasion, we are ambassadors, and our name will be tied with Scholars Inn. We're not going to be there every day to run it. Matt and Molly will do that. And that's one of the reasons why we're going forward, because we can be ambassadors. Look, we're getting older. I'm going to turn 50 years old next year. And as I said, we've got a lot of other interests, including Orange Theory Fitness, including Carrie's a realtor. She just designed a lake house, and she's got a lot of plans with that. And as I told you, I wrote a script because of frustrations out of the restaurant industry towards the end of my first go-round. So we have a lot of other interests, not to mention we have two kids.
We've been talking with restaurateur Lyle Feigenbaum of Scholars Inn in Bloomington. We'll have more on what Lyle has been up to, which involves writing a television series, when we're back here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Maybe you've thought that your business or work environment would make a great setting for a TV script. Well, restaurateur and former actor Lyle Feigenbaum of Scholars Inn in Bloomington knew that there was plenty of material in the restaurant business. So after getting out of the biz, he started writing. And what began as a sort of therapy turned into a television show.
Let's talk a little bit about the script and screenwriting. This is kind of interesting. This is something I didn't know about, so let's explore that a little bit.
So as I told you earlier, I got in the restaurant industry because I was an actor in New York City, and I waited a lot, which meant that I waited tables at a lot of cool restaurants. And I did a lot of writing back then. So towards the end of our run the first time, I started writing. It was a great creative release. And I remember I told my wife the concept I had for this series. It's I always felt like George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life as a restaurant owner. It's two steps forward and one and seven, eight steps back, right? And so I felt somewhat trapped, I guess, is the best way of saying it. Which is also a way of looking at things, perspective, just like George Bailey, right? He needs to learn how to appreciate how wonderful a life he truly has. So I also love Larry David's sensibility and Curb Your Enthusiasm and Seinfeld. And so I wrote a script where two worlds collide, where you have It's a Wonderful Life colliding with Curb Your Enthusiasm. And what created was what was born was It's an Okay Life.
Okay, and is it situated in the restaurant industry?
It is. It is, actually. And it actually takes place in Bloomington, Indiana.
Oh, very handy.
And because of, and so I wrote the pilot 2 years ago, and I sent it around to a few people and was amazed by the response. And
so you got good response.
It was fantastic.
Oh,
and it inspired me to keep writing more. And so I did. I wrote 13 episodes.
Wow.
But I had to go back to the original pilot. because the original pilot was written as a creative release. It wasn't written with a lot of technical expertise. So it took me a long time to develop that pilot in a way that was marketable, because the pilot is vital. It doesn't matter how good any other episodes are. If you don't have a strong pilot, you're not going to get picked up. Well, I'm proud to say that through help with Indiana University Theater Department, Dale McFadden, who was my professor
back when I was at IU.
I hooked up with Zachary Spicer. Zach is an alum of IU, and John Armstrong as well, and they created Pegasus Pictures out of Chicago. Mm-hmm. Zach is also a working actor and has a lot of film credits. And so we teamed up. They liked the pilot when I pitched it to them.
Oh, my goodness.
And to make a long story short, we spoke last week, and we are moving forward and a very realistic possibility of production in this coming winter.
Oh, my goodness. Now, how cool is that? That must be very satisfying.
It's unbelievably satisfying. You know, what we love about the restaurant industry, and one reason I'm so jazzed right now, is we love the creative aspect of it.
Sure.
And
the
there's a lot of
there's
constant creativity. Right. Now, the redesign is a big deal, and that is something that we're very excited about. But I've learned, let's let people who know what they're doing, Phantom and Lori will. With Phantom, it's amazing. So let her do her thing, but we can appreciate the process. But new menu, new drinks, you're always trying to push the envelope. Martini nights in Bloomington back in the day, I mean, the line
was
so packed, you can believe it.
That was something special, right?
Yeah, it was. So we've always tried to do that. Well, with the script, I've tried to push the envelope as well. Now, I'm going to let you know, it is R-rated. It is not for the faint of heart by any means. But it is...
The restaurant industry perhaps is not for the faint of heart either.
No, that is true. It is not, certainly. So it ties in well, and it is such a creative release for me.
So what kind of episodes might we see? What kind of issues or
Well,
ideas?
I can tell you about the pilot.
Okay, tell us about the pilot.
The pilot is about a man. He is a man certainly with his issues, and he's at other restaurants before, and for whatever reason, he's going all in on this one. Other restaurants have, for various reasons, had to close, and so this is his last chance. And on top of that, he wants to prove to his daughter just how much he loves her.
Now, how old is this
She's
daughter?
The GM.
Oh, so my goodness. So this is a dad and a daughter
right.
running
and
a restaurant.
And she's agreed to come back because basically he has proven to her that he is going to do the right thing. But like many of us, when you reach my age, it's hard to break out of your way of looking at things.
Old habits,
which is all of us need to appreciate how wonderful a life we truly have. And not focus on the negative, which seems like what we're taught to do, and really appreciate the positive. And so the whole series is about this person who struggles with that. And he has help in every episode in a very unique way and to appreciate.
So now is this where the It's a Wonderful Life kind of influence comes in?
Absolutely. And the Larry David influence is heavy throughout because it is a very unorthodox way of teaching someone a lesson. And every episode helps him along the way. But look, if you go to a therapist, you're not fixed overnight.
That's right.
So there's a lot of fodder and a lot of seasons to be written with this episode. So
now,
we're very excited
now
about
is it. Is it based on some personal
series.
Experience?
Of course.
Okay.
Every character, by the way, comes from a seed of truth. So every character I've written about is someone in my life. And I like that because I could visualize them. But they're the seed. What grows is what's out of my imagination.
Sure.
Now, it could be a lot of this character. In particular, there's a character named Lucille. Lucille is the heart and soul of It's an Okay Life.
Based on somebody?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. If you talk to Lucille, she'll tell you she raised me. And she is awesome. I can hear her speaking in my ear with every line that I write. And she's a major part of it.
So you are very excited about this series. I mean, you're just smiling. It must be very exciting.
It is beyond exciting. It is. It's a dream come true. It is a passion of mine. You know, what I love is creating. When I'm writing, I'll give Soma a plug in Bloomington. I love to go to Soma.
Right.
I love to put my earphones on. I love to listen to focus music on Spotify and write. And when you create something that didn't exist, there's no feeling like it. And so when it comes to It's an Okay Life and this series, it really makes me... It is incredibly fulfilling. And to work with a group like Pegasus and Zach Spicer, who you can see, they know I'm new to the industry, but they can see the potential in it. They can see certainly the passion. I think you can see it right now, too, that there's something special there. And so they've hooked me up with a writer who wrote The Good Catholic that's coming out this coming September, which is going to be an incredible movie that took place in Bloomington, by the way. It's with mm-hmm. Danny Glover, and I think John C. McGinley's in it as well. So I'm very excited to be a part of that team. And I can't wait. When I write new episodes, and I can tell you, they're out there, but they all have this kind of hook that comes 360 in a very clever way. So you didn't necessarily see it coming, but it's an aha moment.
Now, where will we see this? Where do you hope it will eventually end up?
Well, when you write a pilot for a series like this, the hope is that it gets picked up. So really what we're doing right now is, I really should defer to Pegasus to talk a little bit about it. But the hope is that we can write it for some production company, whether it's HBO or Hulu, Amazon, someone like that to potentially pick it up, or someone who actually themselves has a production company that may want to pick it up and produce it and then take it on. That's an option too. I just want to be a part of it. I want to keep writing creatively with it. This is certainly my baby, and I want to see it grow up.
Now, what kind of comparisons can you make between the restaurant business and then writing about the restaurant business?
As I said, for me, the most fulfilling part is the creativity of it. I love the creativity of the restaurant business, and I love seeing people happy. I really do. If we have parties, we have a lake house on Lake Lemon. We actually rent it out. My wife, she's far more creative than I am. Carrie is, and she's the one person I could not write in the script, by the way.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah, because I could not write. I told myself, if I'm going to write, I have to be completely free. And Carrie is the love of my life. And if I had to, I have to worry about what she's going to think. So she's the only person I kept out of it. My mother, on the other hand, is in it.
Maybe she's happy about that.
Yeah, she probably is. My mother, on the other hand, is in it, and it's pretty wild.
Your mother's still with us?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wow. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, my parents are, they're 82, 83 years old, and they are... their mood going all around the world. They're incredible.
So that will be interesting for them to perhaps see themselves in your work.
Yes. Yeah, it really would because, like I said, it's out there. She's read the scripts. She likes one of them. The other one, she goes, I don't know. What are you writing? Anyway, when it comes to the similarities, we love to see people happy. So my wife designed this lake house. It's off the charts. And while it is a second home to us, we rent it out as well. And the feedback is overwhelming. And when we have parties, we haven't as much this summer because with Orange Theory, we're so busy in Bloomington and Carrie's real estate and now this and the writing. So but we have Gatsby Fridays because I love, Carrie does too, we work our tails off because we love to see people happy. And I think, by the way, too, that's why the response was so overwhelming, because I think deep down, everyone who came to Scholars Inn over the last 20 years felt that, knew that we cared about their experience and making them happy for the short time that they're there. It's theater.
We've been talking with Lyle Feigenbaum of Scholars Inn in Bloomington. For more information on the restaurant, go to scholarsinn.com and look for it on Facebook. We've heard a lot lately about the up-and-coming food scene in Indianapolis, and our top chefs and restaurants have gotten considerable attention lately. But one local beverage business is stepping into the spotlight as well. Garden Party Botanical Hard Sodas, from the husband and wife team of Aaron and Stephen Eds,
recently gained a mention in Bloomberg Businessweek for their artisanal wine cooler-inspired malt beverages. And that was after the company was named a recipient of Beverage Industry Magazine's 2016 Innovation of the Year Award. We've talked with Erin before here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio and followed her efforts to bring the new Garden Party line to the market, so it was time to catch up with her again. I talked with Erin recently at the Speakeasy Workplace in Indianapolis about the Garden Party story and what she's been up to since launching the new line in November.
Since we launched in November, we are now in approximately 150 individual locations, including Target and Fresh Thyme. We're in several restaurants, including Ale Emporium and Ralston's Draft House down on Mass Ave. And it's just going great. We're looking forward to the weather warming up.
So it's been a good launch, right?
It's been a fantastic launch. It's well exceeded our expectations.
Now, what did you have in mind for it? Did you have a scenario that you were expecting?
We knew that we were launching at a really odd time of year for our product because it's very much a seasonal-driven drink, very much in tune with warm weather, patio, picnics and outdoor events. So we knew we were launching at an odd time, but that allowed us to build the relationships to get the distribution in place and to get ourselves situated for a great spring.
Well, now tell me again about, kind of describe the product in case people aren't aware of it. I'm sure they're starting to see it now out and about. But describe Garden Party a little bit.
So we are a 100% all-natural botanical hard soda. Now, when you hear the word hard, you have to realize that means that there is alcohol in the product. And that's been a big challenge for us as far as consumer education, that it isn't just a botanical soda. It is an adult beverage. We have two flavors. Violet is lemon infused with lavender and blackberry. And Ruby is a spicy ginger soda infused with hibiscus and pomegranate.
Now, what do people, you mentioned consumer education, so are people not understanding what the category of a hard soda is? Because, we have been seeing, hard root beers and that sort of thing out there. Is it new? Is it something unusual?
So the definition of the category is well defined. Where we fit in that category is maybe a little bit more confusing for the consumer. They're used to hard sodas being very generically flavored and extremely sweet. We've dialed back the sugar considerably compared to the other brands in the market and have more complex, culinarily themed or born flavor profiles.
So it's different from the hard lemonade, the hard soda, things like that we might be aware of, but it's in that same category.
Right. It is malt-based, so from a legal standpoint, it is technically a beer product. And a lot of the nostalgia from the brand comes from the Bartles and James and the Zima consumers of the, 90s. And so there's a nostalgia factor, but we are elevating that experience to a more defined palate.
So like you've said in describing the product, the wine cooler grows up, right? So maybe if someone was drinking Bartles and James in their 20s, and maybe they're in their 40s now, and they're not drinking, that silly sort of wine cooler anymore. So maybe is that the market you're going for?
Absolutely. If you enjoyed a good Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill, in college, then you'll definitely enjoy Garden Party because it's floral, it's botanical, it's sweet, but it's not too sweet. It's very food friendly. And it's something that you can enjoy in a myriad of settings.
And it is in a can, right? So this is where the seasonal kind of thing comes in, because I'm imagining it in in coolers and that sort of thing for events.
That was a huge factor in why we decided to go into cans. We're home to the largest the world's largest single day sporting event being the Indianapolis 500, which is a BYOB event, but the one thing you can't bring is glass. So let's give consumers who don't necessarily want to drink beer all day an alternative to things that they can pack in their coolers and enjoy.
So now give me a little bit of the backstory of the product and, you know, and how you developed this, because, you know, a botanical hard soda, it sounds a little, like it was kind of hard to come up with those kind of flavors. It sounds a little more complicated than some drinks that we might be more familiar with.
So way back, go back to 2007, 2008, my sister Katie and I had Country Mouse City Mouse, which was an artisanal food brand. And one of the things we did to complement our offerings at the farmers markets was make drinks. And we had a lavender blackberry lemonade and a ginger hibiscus pomegranate iced tea that we would sell by the glass. And so we already had kind of tested those flavors out on a wide consumer base and thought, hey, let's try to carbonate them and add alcohol and see how they turn out. And they worked really well.
So you kind of had the recipes already in mind. Were you waiting for the right time? I mean, talk a little bit about your personal saga in the beverage industry, because you know this is not your first rodeo.
It's not. I wanted to wait until I was, you know, officially separated from my first venture before I started to pursue anything else.
So people might remember you from Hoosier Mama days, right?
Right. Correct. I was the co-founder of Hoosier Mama back in 2010. And when I exited the brand, I went to teaching at the culinary school at Ivy Tech, because I was pretty sure at that point I was done with entrepreneurship. But, you know, that is a bug that doesn't leave you very easily. And so we just started paying attention to trends in the industry. When we saw Not Your Father's Root Beer, we realized that this was a category that was probably going to make quite a comeback. And then you have Charles Jolie up in Chicago, who has Craft House, which is a ready-to-drink cocktail. And so between the two of those, we definitely saw that there was a opportunity to introduce a premium product in a category that up until that point didn't have a premium offering.
But now, when you created Hoosier Mama, you did that because someone asked for something like that. And you said, yes, I can do that. And you created the recipe and that sort of thing. How did you go about, you know, launching a whole new brand?
I mean, it was literally like a wing and a prayer. I was reading an article one day that was talking about the reemergence of the wine cooler category and how it was kind of ripe for relaunch. And I sent Steven, my husband, my business partner, a text that simply said the wine cooler grows up. And he pulled his car over and called me and said, okay, we're doing this. And so...
It was
kind of a, you know, pie in the sky, something we were working on just kind of on the side. And then it quickly became what we were going to be doing.
So I find it fascinating to think about just deciding, I'm going to create this beverage in this burgeoning new category. And then you made it happen. I mean, you had to work with some pretty big issues. You know, you have formulation and flavors. And so tell me a little bit about that.
It's amazing how hard things get when you decide to add alcohol to something. Everything I had done prior to Garden Party was either food or a non-alcoholic beverage mixer. And so we had, I mean, the learning curve was steep. We luckily were able to find a group that helps manage the process for startups. specifically in the alcoholic beverage industry. So they helped us figure out compliance, helped us source our manufacturer, and helped with, you know, regulatory stuff that we wouldn't have had a clue about.
So you just kind of dove in?
Yeah, without a scuba tank or goggles or, yeah. We pretty much went in, you know, guns blazing, saying, what do we do best? We make things work. And so we made it work. And so far it is.
We've been talking with Aaron Eds of Garden Party Botanical Hard Sodas. Stay with us for more from Aaron here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Big ideas often start out pretty small. That was certainly the case with the new Garden Party Botanical Hard Sodas that launched late last year in Indianapolis. Garden Party is the latest venture from Aaron and Stephen Eds, and from the national attention the company has received lately, it looks like Garden Party is definitely poised to go big. But the inspiration for the hard sodas came from products developed years ago for our local farmers markets. Aaron Eds tells us how they took the product from idea to development, the research that it took, and who she called when she saw her product in a national publication. So tell me just a little bit about some of the national attention, the awards, and media attention that you've gotten lately.
So before we even launched the product, we were named Beverage Industry Magazine's 2016 Innovative Product of the Year. Now that is, it's a trade publication, but it's a national trade publication for anything that's liquid and consumable. So it's everything from coffee to coconut water to vodka. And they recognized what we were doing was very different and innovative. And so they named us one of five out of an approximate 3,000 new products that are introduced to the market every year.
So you were one of five?
We were one of five. And it was something that we did not apply for or submit our names for.
So this is just something, some entity noticing you and deciding that, your product was going to be innovative even before it was to the market?
Yeah, it was industry recognition before we even launched. And that was just absolutely incredible and just a very strong validation of what we were doing. Now, yesterday, we had our first national non-trade publication recognition. We had a beautiful write-up in Bloomberg Businessweek talking about the new artisanal approach of the wine cooler and the hard soda market.
Well, now that must have been very exciting. What do you think when you saw your product, you know, in a publication like that?
Called my mom and and, you know, just looked at it and said, this is incredible. I can't believe this is actually happening. You know, we're just a two-person operation, and we have a great team built up around us. But you know, we're, you know, Indianapolis, we're, you know, just distributed in the state, and we're getting this national attention that, to my knowledge, is pretty unprecedented for any brand in Indy.
So it is very cool. You are just distributed in Indiana right now. And so people are finding you somehow, though.
Yeah, the writer of the Bloomberg, the Business Week piece, reached out to me via our website. So he was Googling and searching for information on different brands that fit into the category that he was featuring. We sent him product. And he chose to use us as one of the featured brands.
Well, now you mentioned the website. You do have a pretty awesome website. So tell me a little bit about that.
So we work with this awesome design and marketing firm called Rare Bird. And they developed our website. It's very whimsical. It's very kind of fantasy land. You know, we have a fox and a tuxedo and a unicorn. And it's very, you know, playful and fun. But it's also really informative. We have a great location tool on our website if you're looking to find the product to purchase. And we also have a lot of great recipes because not only can you drink it by the can, you can also make it, use it as a mixer for cocktails.
Now, was that intentional? Was that part of what you thought of when you were designing the product?
It actually was not. Our original intention was a single consumable product that would just be enjoyed on its own. But when we started doing our focus groups, the restaurant and bar owners that we knew said, guys, you can make some pretty incredible cocktails with these as well. And so we had to kind of wrap our minds around the fact that, you know, we already had a product that had 8% alcohol, but people were going to be making cocktails with it too. So that was a surprising sort of add-on for what we did.
So you mentioned the focus groups. How did that go? Did you get a lot of good response from that? Is that a helpful kind of step in the process?
We went through 5 rounds of R&D. So each one of those, we did a small focus group. Towards the end, we did larger focus groups and gave the participants surveys to fill out anonymously as far as, you know, how they felt about the different flavors and if they thought they could be improved upon and how. And we took all of that information and incorporated it into the next round of development.
So this has been an ongoing process. How long did it take from when you sent that text to where we are now?
Started officially working on it in November of 15. So we're at almost a year and a half since, you know, we first uttered the words and we launched 4.5 months ago.
So how did the idea of Garden Party come about?
The flavors are botanical, they're floral, they're, you know, using various things from herbs to fruit to botanical elements. And so to me, that's just, you know, a garden party. And then you have the aspect of the entertaining side of things where especially the bridal industry right now is very much about the kind of the do-it-yourself, the Pinterest, the Etsy, you know, the kind of whimsy of everything as opposed to being very formal and traditional. And so it fit in that way too.
Well, you kind of fit into that category, the sort of do-it-yourself kind of category. This is sort of a do-it-yourself company, right?
Yeah, it totally is. You know, when Stephen and I got married almost 14 years ago, we were DIY before DIY was a thing. I mean, I handmade all of our invitations, all of our favors. You know, it was just very crafty. And I see Garden Party being very much the same way, much as Country Mouse, City Mouse, and Hoosier Mama were. You know, they were born out of a kitchen and introduced to a farmer's market. And so, you know, we just kind of took that model and scaled it.
So what have been some of the challenges? I mean, I'm sure this has probably been a hard process too.
Consumer education is probably our most challenging thing right now, just because we want to make sure that we're defining the consumer, the customer's expectations as far as what they're going to experience when they try the product. Without that element, it can be a bit surprising when you do try the products because they're very, very, very different than anything else on the market.
Well, now, when you say surprising, what do you mean? You know, how do you describe them?
So with the Ruby especially, that's the one that I think takes the most upfront information because it's very ginger forward. So it's, you know, spicy like a Moscow Mule, but then it has a lot of tart and floral elements as well. So it's not necessarily that it's sweet. It's just, it's strong and it can be surprising to somebody that doesn't know what they're getting themselves into.
So like if they were imagining a sweet wine cooler, it would be a surprise.
Absolutely. The Violet, on the other hand, is very approachable. It's, you know, it's citrusy, it's kind of juicy berry and a little bit of floral lavender, but it's very easy to drink. It's very clean. It's very soft. And I would say that that's probably the fan favorite, although the people that love Ruby are like hardcore about it. They love it.
So do you have more flavors that you're working on? How do you develop a new flavor? What kind of, what's your mind, what's your process, your thought process?
Right now we're just paying a lot of attention to trends in the market, to see what flavors are emerging, what's becoming trendy. We had two flavors. We have two flavors that we've been fleshing out. I don't know if they will stay, but we're definitely intending on coming out with two more.
How do you see the business growing? I mean, it seems like this could be, you know, a whole line of these sorts of drinks.
Yeah. You know, when I first learned the term line extension, it was hard for me to wrap my head around because I was very focused on the products that I had already created. This is back in Hoosier Mama days. But when we created Garden Party, it was like so obvious that there were so many different opportunities to take it in other directions, whether it be spirits or wine or, you know, liqueurs. It just, there are a lot more opportunities within a brand that you don't set out just to have one or two SKUs.
Are you always thinking? I bet you are such an entrepreneur and have such an entrepreneurial attitude. I bet you've always got these ideas just kind of cooking around in your head.
It's really hard to focus on anything else because once I become fully committed to something, I go all in. So, you know, I know for Steven and I, living together, being married, and also being in business together, it's perfect because we're both obsessed. We're both completely obsessed with Garden Party. We're both completely committed to making it work. So the fact that we're pretty much doing it 24/7 works.
We've been talking with Aaron Eds of Garden Party Botanical Hard Sodas. For more information on the company, including where to find the products, go to drinkgp.com. I'm Jolene Ketzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. Thank you so much for tuning in to our show today, and thanks also to our guests, restaurateur Lyle Feigenbaum of the Scholars Inn in Bloomington, and entrepreneur Aaron Eds of Garden Party Botanical Hard Sodas in Indianapolis. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indie Radio.